This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
You know, folks, every Tuesday we spend a little time with the NOLA Coalition members, and these are difference makers in our community, and we feel so strongly about it. Even on Election Day, we want to reach out and touch some of these folks and speak with them about what they're doing, because it's really important to our local economy, our local culture, what we do here, and the successes that we enjoy. And today's no different. We're joined by Kelsey Foster, Executive Director of Algiers Economic Development Foundation. Kelsey, welcome to the show.
Hey there. Thanks so much for having me, especially on Election Day.
So, Kelsey, as close as Algiers is, sometimes it seems very far away for some. That, in fact, it's funny. Some people have never been on that bridge, you know, going to that
That's
side of the
right.
river. But it's good to check in with you guys, because y'all are a very important part of the city and kind of have your own micro economy over there as well. So tell us about what's going on in Algiers.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of really exciting stuff happening in Algiers right now. We are about 58,000 people, so we're a large chunk of the population of New Orleans, and we are everything within the city of New Orleans here on the West Bank, which is something I think a lot of folks don't know either. We are rocking and rolling here with a lot of small business support. That has been the backbone of our services for the last several years. We've seen a huge increase in small locally owned restaurants, which has been very exciting for us. And just recently hosted our first career fair since before Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, it's interesting. Algiers is really kind of walker friendly for, in many areas of Algiers, right?
It is. It depends where you're at, but especially the old Algiers community, that kind of historic land use that you're used to seeing maybe in other parts of East Bank New Orleans, really lends itself to coming over maybe on the ferry to walk around, grab dinner, grab a drink, maybe at the Old Point Bar on the levee, and making a night of it.
And because of, even though with the new bridge it's a lot easier, old habits die hard. I guess it's really important to make sure that there's so a lot of what is available on the East Bank is also available right there in Algiers. And I got to imagine in some cases that's got to be a challenge, right?
Absolutely. That's a big part of what we do here for not just our small businesses, but also our job seekers, our residents, is trying to kind of serve as a, you know, a bridge, if you will, to the East Bank. We find that river separates us in a lot more ways than just traffic. And it's pretty common that we talk to small business owners or residents who just don't know about some of the services or programming that exists elsewhere in our region. I think for a lot of us, we identify as much as a West Banker as we do a New Orleanian. And so sometimes it can be easier for us to plug our folks into programming even in Gretna or, the West Bank of Jefferson Parish, or even over in Plaquemines. And so we try to make sure we've got a really good pulse on all the things going on across the East Bank and West Bank, New Orleans. So we can plug in our people to the technical support programs for small businesses, to careers that are in demand and on the rise, because that message doesn't always make it over here to Algiers.
I get through Algiers quite a bit. My mom's in a nursing home over there, and I've seen just a lot of improvement, a lot of cleaning up, a lot of drainage work. The canals look a lot prettier, as impossible as that may seem. But there's been a lot of activity there.
Absolutely. You know, one story we tell quite a bit about Algiers in this kind of current moment is the curse and the blessing that not flooding was for us in Katrina. So obviously, you know, we didn't have any levee breaching. We remained fairly dry. But that does mean that we didn't see a lot of public investment into capital projects for a long time. Obviously, there was greater need elsewhere in the city. And now that that kind of rebuilding money is sunset, we're starting to see that investment come across the river to Algiers. So we've just cut a ribbon on a new 4th District New Orleans police station. Our library is new. We've just reopened Skelly Rupp Baseball Stadium. So for the first time in a long time, our Algiers kids can play a local home game for baseball or softball.
Y'all have some teaching institutions there. Holy Cross College seems to be doing, they're alive and doing very well.
That's right. A lot of folks don't know that Algiers is home not just to University of Holy Cross, which is a private four-year institution, but also Delgado West Bank, which is obviously our Delgado Community College. And so I think there's a little bit of something for everyone here in that regard. One of my absolute favorite statistics about University of Holy Cross is that they are one of the leaders in the entire country for economic mobility, meaning students are coming in at a socioeconomic status lower than where they will find themselves after graduation. So it's really a way to get a good job and move yourself up for your family.
Hell yeah, I have a Chick-fil-A in Algiers now.
I mean, we do. Man, we've got to cut a lot of ribbons lately, and that's an exciting part of my job, but I don't think we've had as much excitement about much of anything as we have about a Chick-fil-A. So folks love it, and they seem to be thriving. And I want to also just note, they are a wonderful community partner for us. We host a workforce development program for high school juniors and seniors every spring. And Chick-fil-A is always a wonderful part of that, not just in donating some chicken, which the young folks love, but also in sending volunteers. We host mock job interviews once a year with our cohort, so they have to practice dressing up and preparing for the job interview. And usually a team member from Chick-fil-A joins us to give a youth that opportunity to practice before the real thing.
Yeah, you know, the General de Gaulle corridor is really, it looks a lot different today than it did just 5 years ago. And I guess that's a testament to a lot of hard work by a lot of groups such as yours. But it's really paying off.
Absolutely. We are really excited to see investment, as you mentioned, in the canal. DePaul Community Health has just opened a primary care clinic here, which we are incredibly excited about. Algiers saw some of the highest rates of COVID deaths and in the entire city of New Orleans, and we want to make sure that that health care access is really, really available for our folks. Crossing that river truly can be a pain in the butt sometimes, so we're happy to have them here. And we're hopeful for even more investment in the near future. There is a lot of developable and underdeveloped multifamily opportunity here in central Algiers, and we're really hopeful that we can work with some really quality, reputable developers to come over here and provide some safe housing for folks when we know our city is in a lot, we've got a lot of demand for affordable, safe housing.
Kelsey, correct me if I'm wrong. Did I see a study that that indicated that that housing was more affordable in Algiers than most of the other areas within the city of New Orleans?
It is, actually. As a whole, it's about a 30% discount on a comparable piece of land. So that's going to be a little different depending on where you are in Algiers. We're 17 square miles with a lot of diversity from Algiers Point all the way down to English Turn and a lot in between. But generally speaking, that bridge discount will get you a little more house for your buck over here in Algiers. And it's something we've started to really see grow for us, particularly along the levee between Federal City and Algiers Point. There's been two really amazing developments of gorgeous housing with a beautiful view of the river and downtown and right next to the ferry. So a great place to live to get yourself to work quickly.
Absolutely. Now, you guys have a big event coming up. Saturday, December 7th is the Algiers Holiday Bonfire and Concert. Tell us about it.
That's right. The Bonfire is the largest festival in Algiers every year. It will be December 7th this year, and it's a nod to the traditions of the river parishes. So just like they do upriver, we light a 30-foot bonfire. It's usually something artistic, so a sculpture of some sort. We partner with the New Orleans Fire Department, and a lot of our small businesses come out to highlight their services. So if you want to try a new food truck or a pop-up over here on the West Bank, you're going to find them at the bonfire. We've also got a holiday art market, so it's a great place to do some Christmas shopping, especially if you want to support local and local artists.
And for more information on that, you can go to your website at algierseconomic.com. Is that correct?
That's right. Everything will be on our website. The festival is free and open to the public, and we really encourage everybody to come out, especially if you haven't been or if you haven't been in a while. We've really invested in a lot of ways to include our community in this event, so we're highlighting local high school marching bands, church choirs, and our headliner this year will be Sun Pie Barns, and we're incredibly excited to have a little bit of Zydeco music with us this year.
Absolutely. And then right on the heels of that, you have your Algiers Economic Development Foundation annual meeting on December 11th at the English Turn Golf and Country Club.
That's right. December's a busy month for us. We like to keep it rolling over here. The annual meeting is a great time to come out and network with other businesses. It is a time to hear about what it is we've been working on over here in Algiers all year, and to meet other folks invested in the West Bank. It's usually a really great turnout with some great information and really wonderful opportunity. So I highly encourage you to check out our website for tickets and information. We're also currently open to sponsorship. So if you'd like to invest in the work we're doing here on behalf of small businesses, youth, and community in Algiers, you've got two opportunities coming up on December 7th and 11th.
Final thoughts?
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say that the West Bank is the best bank. And if any of your listeners want to know more about why I think
spoken
that,
like a true
I
West Banker,
to reach out.
Kelsey Foster, thank you so much for joining us today. Executive Director of the Algiers Economic Development Foundation. Keep up the great work and have a great weekend.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one serve this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Brandon Wright from the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, who authored a policy brief. Are education programs for high achievers inherently inequitable? Brandon, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
So we had a lot of folks talking about this pursuit of equity, as you pointed out in this policy brief, and they right away assume that they are inequitable, but you say otherwise.
Yeah, the issue here, right, is that too many of them have been in the past and too many of them continue to be. But there are ways to do this that are equitable. And we see this in certain places. Research shows that doing so is possible. So the solution to the problem where this is being done poorly is not to eliminate these programs because they're important for the kids that participate in them. The solution is to do them better and implement them in a better way. So the brief sort of explains all that, explains how to do that. So that's what we say should happen.
So, I mean, a lot of folks want to believe that there's a one size fits all as an educational solution, but that's not necessarily true, right? I mean, you're not reaching everyone in their place. There obviously, I mean, I experienced it, you experienced. There were kids smarter than me, more advanced than me, read more than me, put more work in than me, and, you know, as it relates to grades and otherwise, achieved more than me.
Right, yeah. The brief goes into this. There's studies that show that in sort of an average classroom, there are kids that are sort of seven grade levels apart. It's a huge gap. And the alternative to sort of these advanced education programs is to put all kids in the same grade in the same class and then ask a teacher to teach to that huge spectrum of achievement. We call this differentiated instruction. And, you know, perhaps our best teachers in our best schools, right, can do this. But to ask every teacher in every state to do this is, frankly, impossible, right? And the brief goes into this, and it shows that this doesn't work, that asking teachers to do this at scale doesn't work. It's extremely hard. And so if that sort of alternative can't work, the only other way to do this is to, you know, take kids who are achieving at a, you know, high clip and put them in a separate program in some way. And, right, so that's why these are important. There's no way to sort of give every kid the education they deserve that gives them the best chance to succeed in life to the level that they can without having these programs.
So you're saying that there are steps that you take to put what has historically been viewed as marginalized students in a better position to be able to participate in these accelerated classes. But this is something that you got to be mindful of, and you actually have to have programs in place to accomplish same, right?
Yeah. So there's sort of two big ways to do this. One is to universally screen everybody, right? So you take, you know, some tests that all these kids already take, and then you use that and, you know, say grades to find, right, a subset of kids who are achieving sort of, you know, at the top, right? That could be 10%, it could be 15, it could be 20, right? And then you take them and you offer them a placement in some sort of, you know, advanced education program. And that could be, right, for you know, each subject could, you know, offer something separate, but you screen everyone, and that's not happening currently in a lot of the ways. The way that this is designed in too many places is parents have to opt into these tests, or teachers have to recommend kids for these tests. And when you find, when you do that, right, you find that sort of the more affluent parents, or right, the sort of more traditionally sort of high achieving kids, you find that you end up having a bias in terms of who you screen for this. And then the other way is to design these programs so that you're serving the high achieving kids in sort of each school, as opposed to setting sort of a cutoff for who qualifies at a district or a state level. And when you do that, right, you have schools that are, you know, sort of low income. You have schools that are more affluent. And if you sort of set a district-wide standard, what you're doing is you're sort of unnecessarily disqualifying kids that, you know, grow up in a home with barriers that their more affluent peers don't. And what you find then is, in the end, you have this sort of imbalance, this problem that we're trying to solve. So sort of those two pretty simple changes lead to much more equitable programs.
Yeah, and I mean, there are a lot of kids that, could probably test near, right? That's whatever that standard is, early onset. And if you, as you point out, identify those and know that maybe they're part of a representative group, that their parents are working in occupations where they're not very nimble, they don't have the time to advocate on behalf of their child. But if you recognize that up on the front end, and you kind of apply a smoothing coefficient to help those along, they're going to benefit in a huge way from this program. And it's amazing to me that people deny that very fact.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it comes from a good place, right? You know, people see, right, that these programs are dominated, right, by you know, affluent kids and white kids, and that, right, in a school district, say, that's, you know, 50% black, right, you only have, you know, 10% of these programs filled by, you know, black students. You see this and you're like, wow, this program is flawed, let's, you know, scrap it. And again, that's just mimetic fix. You aren't actually improving the education of the kids who aren't being included in them, and instead you're placing them or keeping them in classes that aren't giving them the education that they could get if instead you fix these programs and right, include a lot more of these kids in them. So that's a better approach. But it's politically harder. It costs more. It's harder on the right school to get these things in place and to make parents accept them. Right. So this sort of hard path is the right path. You know, too often you see places taking the easy, incorrect path.
Yeah, it's interesting that a lot of the policies that otherwise well-intentioned people have put into place actually increase and advance inequities. And a lot of times, I don't know if you see this, but you find that folks are staring the obvious in the face and walking right around it.
Hello?
Your thoughts. I mean, what you see is, you know, folks are advancing policies that are actually increasing inequities. And oftentimes, as I said, they're staring the obvious in the face and walking right around it. It's kind of mystifying.
Yeah. And I think why this tends to happen, right, that, you know, people, you know, trying to just scrap these, you know, from a good place is they ignore the fact that, you know, affluent kids, right, who tend to be in these programs if they aren't done in a good way, they have a lot of advantages outside of school too, right? So if you aren't providing these kids these services in school, you know, their parents, you know, can you know, get them help outside of it, right? They have, you know, extra time, extra money. So it's really the less advantaged kids who need these programs the most. So if you are taking these away from everybody, you're taking it away from them too. And right, so they sort of have one of the few avenues to sort of, you know, get ahead, taken away from them, and then they're sort of more affluent, advantaged peers. You know, they still have all the other things that they do to, you know, get ahead, I guess, right? So, again, it's coming from a good place, but the result, right, is sort of ironically the opposite of the reason for doing these things.
Yeah, because it's easier to punish those high achievers, right? Because in the overall scheme of things, they're a small minority.
Yep.
Numerically, yep. Right? So, and we just get rid. So that, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, we were hearing about a lot of this at local school boards. A lot of it in Virginia. It became an issue during the 2020 election. I said earlier, as an intro to this topic, that this is an issue that's not going to go away. And no matter who gets elected today, it's an issue that's going to continue to rear its head that we have to really think about openly and critically about how we want to approach this. Because I think you appropriately point out is that the marginalized student, again, gets punished even more so by this kind of narrow perspective that many folks have taken. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think, right, a constructive way to sort of, you know, start to move school districts in the right direction is to, you know, make changes just in what you call these things and how you design these things that sort of, you know, get away from the problem of it being so easy to sort of, you know, punish this small set of kids, right? For a long time, you know, these programs have been called gifted education programs, and there is sort of a bad implication when you know call these things this, because you know everybody therefore who isn't included in it, you're sort of telling parents, well, your kid isn't, you know, a gifted kid. And I have a child, right? If a school told me that my kid, you know, was not that, I wouldn't really enjoy that, right? So
right.
A better approach, right, is to do a few things. One is to call them sort of advanced programs. And then another thing, right, is to sort of have them be sort of more of a continuum of programs, right? So it's not this sort of, you know, we screen you when you're 8, and if you, you know, get into it, you're into it, you know, forever. And if you aren't, you aren't. The better way, right, is to, you know, for some kids, you know, give them supplemental instruction. You know, some kid who's, like, super far ahead, you know, allow them to skip a grade. And screen this sort of on an ongoing basis as kids advance through school. It is sort of very flexible and inclusive way of just trying to give every kid the best education that you can. It avoids telling, you know, the majority of parents in a school that their kid isn't special, which is a terrible, you know, political approach.
And the reality is kids bloom at different ages, right? I was a late bloomer.
Sure.
I probably underperformed through grammar school, definitely through most of my high school. It wasn't until maybe junior year that the light bulb went off for whatever reason, you know, and You know, so it, as you point out, if the paths are already set at age eight, that really doesn't work, in my view. And I guess the evidence shows that it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. And I think why these programs were designed that way for is really the philosophy behind them was just very flawed, right? It was this idea that, like, a kid who is, you know, gifted has something inherent, like special, that and that this sort of inherent quality qualifies them for something special that the other kids shouldn't have, sort of regardless of how they achieve, regardless of sort of everything. It was this, you know, sort of strange IQ approach, which if the point of school is to try to, you know, get every kid the best education you possibly can over the time that they're in it, really just doesn't make any sense to design it that way. So it was this, you know, very like generational sort of flawed philosophy behind this that we're trying to change now.
So we went through this mindset where a lot of school board members, educational leaders were kind of thinking contrary to what you point out as being the obvious in the policy brief. Do you think that's changing?
I think it's changing in some places, right? I think, right, sort of when we started to really examine a lot of these systemic issues, you know, around 2020, that, you know, the pendulum swung pretty far in that direction. Understandably, and that's, you know, sort of how things, you know, tend to work. I think it is, you know, swinging back, partly because of, you know, the sort of reframing that I'm talking about. And I want to be clear that this, you know, when I'm saying, you know, call it something else, this isn't just a semantic thing, right? We're right. Talking about in a completely different and better way, a more inclusive way, right? So it's not just some band-aid. It's not some, you know, political trick. And I think the more that we talk about this, we are seeing progress. Like our organization, a couple sort of more traditionally left-leaning ones, things like automatic enrollment. So you have these programs, you know, say in math, where if you get, you know, some score on a state test, that you're automatically enrolled in, say, Algebra 1. Parents can, you know, opt out if they want to, but you're changing this thing away from forcing parents to opt in, forcing teachers to select, and instead, you know, placing more kids into sort of an advanced class than you were before. And this is sort of, you know, on that continuum I talked about, right? And so you're sort of seeing, you know, bipartisan things like that. And our organization sort of facilitated a working group over the last couple years that was very bipartisan, sort of, you know, very diverse in tons of ways. And everybody in it, right, very much supported the approach to these programs that I've described. So this sort of reframing, I think, is increasingly effective. I do think it'll take time, right, because, like I said, implementing things this way is a more difficult path. And it's not, right, like a sort of easy data fix that just scrapping these programs provides. But, yeah, I think there's progress.
Yeah, I mean, it feels as though people are more receptive to it. Once there was pushback to this that, you know, you're punishing everybody and you're punishing those from marginal income households as well that have achieved a lot of success in that program over the years, and the goal should be for more achievers. Going back to, you know, your algebra example, I wish I could have opted out of algebra forever.
<You know? laughs> Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, I took it in high school, took it in college, and it didn't make any more sense in college than it did to me in high school for certain. So I never had that problem of being labeled as gifted by any stretch of the imagination. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes. I was really intrigued by your policy brief, and I thought it made some really, really neat and keen observations, and thank you for saying. And Brandon, thank you so much for joining us. Brandon Wright from the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Have a great week.
Same. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go to the talk line. Sheila, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I can hardly hear you. Am I still on?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to tell the sheriff that when I hit algebra in high school, I was in ninth grade, I could not ever understand how they could take the numbers that I learned how to add, and now they want me to do that in letters. I never could figure it out. I got a D minus in the course for my freshman year, and I was so glad to get that. I went to my teacher and I told him, "Thank you so much for the D minus." And he said, "Well, I knew you were trying, and I knew you were doing your homework." So I know the feeling. I never understood it. I still don't.
Sheila, it was so bad for me. My algebra teacher used to tell me, "Norman, you come to school to eat your lunch, son." That's how bad it was.
I could not make that transition. It just never made, and still doesn't, you know? So I'm a dummy. I don't care. I got a D minus. I was happy.
I used to go and ask for assistance every day after class. He was so tired of seeing me because it was like he was.
It
could have been Russian, for all you know. At that point, it did none of
exactly,
it sank.
Exactly. But I had a kind teacher.
Yeah, actually, he was very helpful as well.
That would have been my first F I ever got, because I was always a good student. I was an AB student.
Well, I was always motivated by fear, so I didn't make an F, but I got out by the skin of my teeth. But it was not fun, to say the least.
No, I share your feelings. Just wanted you to know.
Well, thank you so much, Sheila, and hopefully you got out to vote today, or you early voted. So have a great day.
I already voted. I was one of the first ones in line. I don't know that we voted the same, but I did
vote. It's okay. Doesn't matter. Does not matter. Just get out and vote. Glad to hear from you, Sheila. Have a great day. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. On a text line, algebra was fine. Trig is what threw me when my teacher told us about imaginary numbers and didn't like my imaginary answers. Now you have me having nightmares thinking about trig. That was the back half of Algebra 2. Side 1 was bad. The second side was worse.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free health care. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.